guys, welcome to Vaudeville, and today I'm here with a very special guest. I am here with
Gabrielle or Gabby,
and today we're going to talk about
voting.
Yay! I mean, election is in like 18 days or less, yeah. So that's literally what we're going to talk about today. So sit back, relax, listen, and enjoy. So, Gabby, when was the first time you actually voted, like, had the voting experience?
The first time I got to vote was during my freshman year of college. I voted, I believe it was my fall semester. I think it was some, like, local elections. And at the time, I was voting for the area I was in, which was around Houston. It was quite different because back home where my family is, you could register online. But in Texas, you can only register on paper. And the only reason why I knew that is because they had voter registration set up in the student center. And so that's how I got registered to vote. And then later got to vote on campus.
That's interesting. I usually thought that when people are voting, they only vote for areas they like are from. So like if you're from Pennsylvania, you can only vote in Pennsylvania elections. I didn't know you could vote in Houston election, Texas elections.
You can vote there because you're living there. Mm-hmm. So like it's the same reason that like, oh, if you change states or something, you're able to vote in that state now. And because I was living there for the foreseeable future, I originally thought about doing an absentee ballot for Pennsylvania, but because I was going to be living there for a while, it seemed to make more sense to just vote for around the local laws. And it's allowed as long as you're not voting in two different places during the same time.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, because I remember one of my professors who was originally from in Nebraska came to Texas, and he found it hard to vote here because they told him that I think something about his ID being from Nebraska or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they said something about 30 days wait something before. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that was a long process. He now said he had to vote in the Nebraska elections at that time before his, I guess, new ID could come or new voter registration card could come. But how did the experience feel like, you know?
It was pretty chill. It was set up in a room within our fitness/health center. I'm forgetting the formal name, but like it's basically our gym on campus, and they have a bunch of extra rooms, and they set up some booths where like you just did your typical voting, you got your I voted pat sticker, and it was a simple process. I had brought along, and it was interesting because I voted there that fall, and then I voted later for a different election, and I had issues because I hadn't brought, I believe, my passport with me or my voter registration, one of the two, for the second election, and so they wouldn't let me vote, and so I wasn't able to vote for that one election, and it was because like I didn't have the time to go back for the early voting XYZ. And, like, I had to show my passport as a form of identification. That's, again, like, another reason why I was able to go is because, like, I have, like, just a general U.S. form of identification, and it wasn't, like, my driver's license, because mine is still registered as Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. So this is going to be, because based on what I've heard, this is your first time voting was of local election your freshman year, which means this is going to be your first presidential election. How do you feel about that?
It doesn't like feel as like the process of voting in and of itself, like just like putting the little bubbles in and stuff, isn't that different, but it does, like the atmosphere of the voting kind of environment is very different because it's a presidential election. And it's also makes me happy to be a part of the process because during the 2016 election, I wasn't old enough to vote, but there were definitely people my age who wanted to, and we just didn't have the ability to.
So are you voting absentee or you're voting in Pennsylvania?
Since I'm living in Pennsylvania and I've been living here for the last like 4 or 5 months and I won't be back to Texas for a while, I decided it's easier on me to just vote here, which is why like I registered here. I'm not voting in Texas anymore. And I have done an absentee ballot that my family actually dropped off today.
Yay!
Yes, you caught me on a good day.
Yeah, I caught you on a good day. So was it like a mail-in type ballot?
Mm-hmm. We had to mail in our registration for the mail-in ballot. Then they sent it back to us. They sent the actual ballot back to us. And then we had to fill it in, and then we dropped it off at a registered like voting area, and it was definitely a slightly difficult process, like not as difficult as other areas but not as easy or as quick as you would have hoped.
So there's a lot of talk from some specific groups and people in high places that say like absentee mail-in ballots is a fraud and it's not going to be counted or is going to be thrown in the sea. What do you think about that personally, as someone who actually did that process?
I think that it's honestly just a ploy or an excuse done by a certain party in order to invalidate a large number of ballots because they know the Democratic Party. You'll be able to tell by like how I talk about the parties, but essentially the Democratic Party is largely voting absentee ballot because a lot of people feel more comfortable doing that. But then there are many Republicans and conservatives who do not really see an issue with going out and standing in booths and lines. So a majority of them are doing in-person voting. So by creating a discussion and validating absentee ballots, it works to their advantage to discount those Democratic votes.
Yeah, I also believe that because it's like they've always been absentee ballots previously, mm-hmm. and they've always counted. It was never an issue until mm-hmm. like this coronavirus happened and they realized that the people who have actually been following the CDC regulations are more likely to like be of one party, which is the Democratic Party. And they are more likely to vote absentee because of fears of actually getting the virus. So I also took it as a ploy, but I know a lot of Democrats who are going the extra mile and actually voting in person because, you know, they are trying to prove people wrong. that, you know, not all Democrats are voting absentee, but majority of them are. But to that point, the rhetoric seems more or less like a voter suppression. Is that how you see it too?
Do you mean like if like it does to me at least, I hope I'm answering this correctly, appear as voter suppression because they are trying to delegitimize a process that has been legitimate for years. And it's something that, like, this isn't the first time my family has done this. Like, my mom has done an absentee ballot before. She actually did it for the last presidential election because she was actually going to be in Texas taking care of my grandparents. So she did an absentee voting ballot. So to try and say that they don't work now when there's been a system in place for years is really just trying to create a narrative that works towards a certain majority.
I mean, I studied a lot of work, like video work, more or less, like documentary and media work on Stacey Abraham, mm-hmm. who is really like gone in against voter suppression that is happening in the 21st century. And to you, your own point of view, what do you see as a 21st century mode of voter suppression, except like this propaganda against, you know, mail-in ballots?
I think It's like the mail-in ballots and like the propaganda against it is definitely one version of 21st century like voter suppression. And it's the most easiest to target because we're in such an unknown situation, such a questionable time, that people are willing to jump on that and say, oh, this isn't right. They're just doing this because it's COVID, XYZ. But like historically, like there have been many different ways, even currently in our election, that there have been new methods of voter suppression. Like, for example, they, in Texas, Governor Abbott tried to put in a ruling where there would only be one mail-in drop-off box for every, like, county. What was it? County. Yeah, for every county. And it was struck down because it was clearly voter suppression. It was biased. It was illegal, essentially. Like, it's not right to say that someone in a county, which could be, like, miles long, like, would have to drive from the other side of the city or whatever, the other side of their county, all the way to one box in one area. Particularly when many metropolitan cities like Houston have certain populations, particularly poorer populations, which are also minority populations, which will not have access to a personal vehicle to take them to that spot, or even the time to go to that spot. So it's a clearly a way to target certain populations.
Yeah, when I read that, I was like, that's ridiculous. Especially when you take into account that most blue Democratic cities in Texas are very populated and are in one county. Like, Houston is in Harris County. That's one county. And Houston is, like, the fourth most populous city in Texas. And you tell them one drop-off box? Like, that was ridiculous. You also look at Dallas County, Brazos County, and Travis County. That's San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, and Houston. And, like, it's ridiculous to say, oh, yes, let's just put one box. And then I was thinking, like, someone who is, like, maybe living closer to where I am, which is, like, mine is Fort Bend County, but, like, I'm living at the edge of the two counties, has to go to somewhere like E of H, somewhere like that, which is, like, over a 30-minute drive to drop off their box, which a lot of people don't have that opportunity to do. With, like you said, with the actually, with Texas not being a very public transportation kind of city, which is especially during this time where it's even harder to get public transportation because of fears of, you know, getting the virus. So that's definitely it. But this also talks about, like, the whole voter ID thing being in itself voter suppression. What do you think about that? Because people, some people disagree, like, oh, yeah, we do need identification. But some people are like, you know, this targets a certain group of people because some, I guess, you talk about it, you say your own point of view, and then I'll say mine.
I can see the necessity of, like, needing an ID to confirm that you have status XYZ to vote, but only allowing certain forms of identifications or certain methods to be identified particularly is a way of suppressing voters, because in Texas you need a U.S. passport, which a lot of people don't have regardless of their voter status, or a driver's license, which is expensive and takes time for some people, and then, like, even if you get an identification card, that's still money that some people might not have to spare, and then you can be registered through things like a gun license. Those, like, things, particularly with a gun license being used, but something like a university ID not being able to be used, or like a company ID, like, that is very much targeted to a certain group. Like, allowing, like, oh, gun vote, like, people who are registered with guns tend, like, not all, but tend to be more conservative leaning, and so when you allow them that speciality of, like, oh, if you don't have this ID, you can use this other ID to vote, you are playing to a certain group.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I also looked up, because, like I said, I did a lot of more study with looking at from the point of view of Stacey Abrams, who is, like, who was running in Georgia, where they needed a lot of birth certificates. And, like, a lot of African Americans do not have birth certificates, actually, since either, because they, in Georgia, especially in poor towns, they're constantly moving. And with that, you lose a lot of your documents as you move by. There are also issues of like, oh, you know, hurricanes happening in those areas and the poor people not being able to go to the main camp because, you know, they have to work and all that things. Go to the main county and ask for your birth certificates, and that also takes time to get. But like, I also look at like systems in Canada where as you are born or as you turn 18, the government has, you know, your information and it has your social security number, and they send you a voter's card like, hey, happy birthday, now you vote. Like, it's not something that you have to actually go and register yourself. It's like, oh, everyone gets in the mail or something like that, and they open it and they're like, oh, hey, my birth card is here, yeah, I'm 18, those kind of situations. And if the United States government has that information, like with censors and with other governmental entities, why can't they do something like that? Like,
the truth of the matter is they could. If they were able to build a system, particularly with the technology we have now, even if it was like on a, like it had to be tailored for like state, local, like information, it would be an amazing opportunity to get more people to vote, to get everyone involved in the democratic process. But many people, particularly certain politicians, don't want everyone to vote because it is a changing demographic currently. America is changing rapidly through immigration, interracial marriages, more educational opportunities. It is shifting the weights of power. And some people who have had that power for a very long time don't want that. And this is one of the easiest ways to maintain their position.
Alright, that's so disheartening to listen to, because you know that as something as like a civil right as voting, you play politics with that, like that's just ridiculous, you know. It also like takes into account like certain people who refuse to vote because they feel like their vote will not be counted. Like someone who is, I guess, very liberal in states like Nebraska, or we're like, what is my point of voting in a state like Nebraska when it's going to be red? It's already going to be predicted. Why do they need my vote? Or someone who's, I guess, Republican in California will probably feel the same way because, you know, they're just like, it doesn't matter what I vote for here. This place is either going to be constant red or constant blue. So why do they need my vote? So what advice would you, I guess, give that certain type of person?
I would say that even if your vote doesn't seem to shift the needle on like maybe statewide or even like a presidential wide in certain circumstances, it is particularly important when it's like comes down to your state and your government, like, or your local government, because those elections do matter. Like, it's something that we in general need to talk about and advocate more, but who your police chief is, who your local judges are, who your commissioners of like transportation or education, they affect day-to-day life. And like, even if you think for like a big election like the presidential that it doesn't matter as much, things change. Like, to take an example, Beto O'Rourke's like bid to be I believe it was governor,
senator.
Yeah. Okay. Senator for Texas. He didn't win, but it was the closest that Texas has gone blue in decades. Texas used to be a blue state. It used to be a blue state, and then it turned red, and it's been red for a long time, but it's the closest it's ever been. And so change might not always be fast. You might think you're stuck in a particular area, but like, it's always best to have your voice be heard, even if it's not always the best outcome. Because if you just build this mindset that it's never going to matter, when it does matter, you aren't there.
That is a very inspiring talk, because like, I totally get it. I've been in situations, I literally, during the primaries, I was in my Spanish class and there were like a group of students who were like, we are not voting, nothing will change. You know, I want to vote for Bernie, but Biden is going to win Texas or whatever, you know. Or like, I had like my friend who's Republican in, let's say, like Maine, who's like, he didn't want to vote for Trump, but he had to. even though there were other candidates in the ballot for, I guess, the Republican ticket, because Maine, if you're a registered Republican, you have to vote Republican. It's not like Texas where, I guess, you can vote Democrat even if you're a registered Republican or whatever in the primaries. He had to because he felt like if he voted the other person, it was like, kind of like a waste or more or less. But yeah, like you said, local elections, because I don't know, people don't really consider local elections, and then they'll be like, why is our police behaving this way? Why is the sheriff such an asshole? Or something like that. And you'd be like, you guys voted him in or her in or whatever. Why is the county judge, you know, this way? And they complain and not knowing that you actually vote those officials in. But yeah, so there was this whole debate, I remember when I was younger, where they said that should they reduce the age to 16 for voting. I remember that was a huge debate when I was in high school.
Yeah.
The presidential election was coming closer, and we had this whole, we sat down, people were saying, they divided us into groups. They told us, do you want the age to be reduced to 16 or keep it as 18 or increase it to 21, the age people can drink or something. And like literally no one went to 21 because everyone was like,
yeah,
what's the logic in that? But like my chair was saying, you know, some people are like arguing that, you know, unless you're old enough to drink is when you can vote or something like that, then your brain is, you know, I guess they said more developed or whatever. That's the argument people make. So what do you think, should he, like, in your own stance, they are giving you these three options, what would you take and why?
I think in an ideal world, I would want it to be 16, because I feel like that's particularly when people start to gain a little bit more independence and thought, kind of begin to shape what they believe in. And like, I understand the idea of waiting till you're 18. It's like, oh, they're finally like fully an adult, so they get all those privileges. But at the same time, I know what it feels like to have an opinion, to watch what's happening and not be able to do anything, because that's exactly how I felt when it was the 2016 election. And I've talked with my cousin, who's like 2 years younger than, like, no, she's 4 years younger than me, so she's like 16 now. And she feels that the same way that I felt during that election, because she wishes she could vote and she can't. And she's aware of what's happening and she's learning about what's happening. And she has her opinions and she's not able to express them. And I think that sometimes this idea that age has some sort of defining factor in what we can do is just a way to keep older people in power. Because we've seen that, like, young people have a growing wealth of knowledge available to them, and they are using that knowledge to make a difference. So they should be given the same opportunity through things like voting.
Yeah, it also leads me to, like, remember when like the Parkland shooting happened and the kids came forward. At that time, they weren't of age to vote, but they were able to make a lot of people reconsider their ideas of guns and like gun regulations and all these kind of things. Look at Greta Thunberg. She isn't of age. Like, right now, I don't think she's 18. I think she's 17 or something like that. Like, when she came out to talk about the climate and all those kind of things, causing a lot of kids to leave school as a protest, she wasn't of age to vote. But she was able to make that change. If I'm not even saying, oh, give kids as young as 5 to vote, obviously not. But like, at certain level of like age 16, yes, definitely people have their own ideas. People are either moving away from their parents' ideologies or solidifying their ideas to what their parents have to say, which obviously will change as their votes will change as time changes. You know, someone might be Democratic when they're 16 and then become Republican at 18. It's your choice, but it's your opinion at that time or whatever. But to kind of like conclude this interview, because this has been amazing. I've learned so much right now. Like, what is your advice for everyone listening and who's of age to vote? Yeah, obviously, I would say go and vote, but like, you give them some kind of like closing remarks or something.
On a technical side for my closing remarks, just Google for your state to see if you're still allowed to register to vote. I know in Pennsylvania, I believe there's like about 10, like 8 more days or something for you to register to vote. So get out there if you can and vote, register, get your mail-in ballot. If you really can't do a mail-in ballot, try to do in person if possible. And on a less technical side and just more on like a kind of more speechy side, but voting matters at the end of the day. Like, you may not like the fact that you have to hear this politics like 24/7, it's on the news, you think it's like spreading negative energy, and that's true. But if you want to be able to make some change in that, whether you're Republican or a Democrat, you need to be an active member of the system. You need to take the time, just a little bit out of your day, to look at the candidates that are offered in your area. Do they align with your ideals? And if so, then go out and vote for them, because this is one of the most essential ways that we can make a difference in our society. If you still want to protest, if you still want to speak and educate people, that's great. Do that, but also make sure that you are taking concrete steps and having your vote be out there so you can change government. And it's not going to happen fast. Like, that's just the sad truth. But the thing is, the people we don't like now, or we feel don't represent us, have a time limit. And that time limit is because everything is changing. The demographics are changing. And the older we get, the more power we have. Like, we are a larger generation. We could outvote some other generations. You just need to go out there and do it.
Thank you so much, Gabby. You have been an amazing host. Like I said, I've learned so much from this conversation. Like, I knew a lot of like this thing that when I was coming in, I was like, oh yeah, I got this, you know, I know it all. And then I sat down, I was like, oh my god, really reconsidering everything. And yeah, voting, you, with your vote, you guys have power. I mean, you guys are able to vote for policies that will affect people like me who cannot vote yet, you know. Because at the end of the day, even I who don't vote, I am affected by whatever policies whoever is leading puts yep. out. And you guys have that power of deciding a lot, because there are millions of people in this country who cannot vote. You guys have the power of deciding their fate, literally. Like, their fate is in your hands, like, in every election. Not even this one. Like, this one is a very pivotal one, but, like, every election is important. Every local state, city, everything is very important, how you vote, what way you vote, and you know, the people you vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just vote based on, okay, I guess I am a Democrat, let me vote every single Democrat person. Do your research, okay? Do your research. Vote on individual, not on party. Like, party does have an effect, you know, okay, each party has their own ideology, and yours might be leaning towards an ideology, but there might be a Democrat who is a gun lover who you are not really aligned with in that aspect, and you might decide, maybe I vote for maybe the Republican. I don't have never seen that situation, but like, the Republican candidate might be a better choice. Go ahead, okay? People who are voting on third party, it's just a sign I have for you, because a lot of third parties are hard to actually win. They get 0.1%, they get 0.2%. Most third party, the highest they can get is like maybe 5%. Do you want your vote to just be an extra for someone who would never win? You make decisions, you know, that will have an effect on you, because that person will never win. The person will never have policies for you at all. So be able to redo your research, look at the two parties, because you know, we're in a two-party system. There's nothing you can do about it right now. We might change that in the future, but right now, in this very pivotal moment, we have a two-party system. I want to work in that system to break the system. That's all I have to say. thank you so much, Gabby. And don't forget to subscribe. I have a plan of making this less than 20 minutes, but it's 29 minutes, but it's all educational, so. so, what do you just say bye to our guest, Gabby?
Bye. It was great getting to speak with y'all, and I hope you learned a little bit. I am by no means a complete voting expert, but if you want to learn more, just hop on whatever resource you have, talk to people, and you can continue to educate yourself.
Definitely. Have a great day, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.